Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Blessings. Welcome to the hottest show on Blog Talk Radio. You are now tuned in to the No Romance Without Finance show. I'm your host, Vernon Muhammad. It's so wonderful to be on with you today. I'm having a great day, so I'm hoping that that means we are going to have a great show. Assalamu alaikum to you all. Peace, Hotep. Good to see you. Glad you can join us. I'm actually on the line with two of my favorite people in all of NOIdom, if you know what that means. For those of you who don't, we'll get into that later. But two of my favorite people, two of the coolest people and really good influences in my life. Some have been for quite a few years now. Sister Gidget, my good sister from way on the other side of the country, how are you?
Assalamu alaikum, sir. How are you?
Alaikum salam. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling great, actually. I had a wonderful day. And it seems like everything is falling into place, and work that I've been putting in for weeks is finally paying off.
Praise be to Allah.
And my brother from another mother from this side of the planet, I certainly appreciate having him on with me. We are honored to have as a special guest with us in this conversation a good brother, student minister in the Nation of Islam and national spokesperson for the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. This is an all-around good brother, Jamil Muhammad. How are you, sir? Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, Brother Vernon. Good to be with you and Sister Gidget this evening and our listening audience. Speaking to you tonight from the city of brotherly love in Philadelphia, where the mosque meeting today in Philadelphia was beautiful. Brother Minister Rodney carried the message here today, and everything is on the uptick indeed. It's also a special weekend because my Howard University Bison just went 7-4, their best record since 1998. Yes, college, black college football is in effect.
We go back and go.
That's right. That's right.
Hey, brother, I want to thank you first and foremost for your years of diligence. For those who don't know you, I came into contact with you in the early part of the 90s. I think it was 92. And you were standing strong as a minister in the city of Baltimore. If Philadelphia is the city of brotherly love, what is Baltimore the city of?
Well, Baltimore, we call Baltimore the little mosque that could. It was always on the East Coast for many years in the Nation of Islam and all of NOI-dom. The Baltimore Mosque was almost an afterthought on the East Coast among the major cities where Islam was practiced and done really, really well. So you had New York, the great number 7, Washington, number 4. You had Philadelphia, the top of the clock, number 12. And then the great mosque, number 25 in Newark, New Jersey. Big 11, Boston, up top. People forgot about Baltimore. Mosque number 6, but it was a major mosque, and the city of Baltimore is a wonderful place to be a Muslim and to practice Islam. And so as we built our mosque and tried to give it a higher national profile, we affectionately called each other and our mosque the little mosque that could, after the little engine that could, as it chugged up the hill thinking, I know I can, I know I can, I know I can. That's how we tried to practice our Islam in the city of Baltimore. It was a great, great mosque to represent, and I'm very, very much still in love with the believers and the community in that great city of Baltimore, Maryland. Yes, sir.
That is awesome. That is awesome. You know, when you're new in the door, you first walk in to just about any place, and the natural reflexive course of action is to look around and see who's who and who you can orient yourself based upon and you know, find out how people are moving and who to pay attention to so that you understand the social norms within that atmosphere. And coming in and seeing you always on point, seeing you do what you do in the way that only you could do it was very inspiring, and it helped me in many points when I had some pretty important decisions to make. You know, certain
all
people, certain things that they would say or certain mannerisms they would have would come through at just the right time to give me a little glimmer of guidance into what I pray Allah
that whatever you gleaned from my words or example was the best of what I said or did. But surely I've made enough mistakes to outfit and equip an army of mistake makers. But I'm very, very glad that you have said what you've said this evening. I'm honored beyond my ability to describe. And certainly with Sister Gidget herself with us tonight and her national reputation as a sister who keeps the program of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Minister Farrakhan in front of us at all times, I'm just excited to be here with you tonight, Brother Vernon. It's a great time to be a Muslim.
Awesome, awesome. Well, Brother Jamil and Sister Gidget, you already know I've been kicking around this conversation for quite a while. For those of you who are tuned in, our show, the title of this episode is A Community of Our Own. Now, just about any part of that phrase can set off a number of thoughts and a number of ideas, but I want to really share and hopefully have this conversation based on communications and conversations I've been having over the past 6 months to a year with various people about a community of our own, about what it really means to say the black community, our community, what we are as a community. And then when we talk about ownership of our community, now I know we tune into the No Romance Without Finance show, and I say this all the time, if you thought this was going to be about relationships and all the lovey-dovey stuff, eventually we'll get to that. But there is no romance without finance. So a certain portion of our show and a lot of what we do is strictly business. So, yes, we're really going to focus on the community, but we're going to focus more on ownership of our community, taking ownership of our community, assuming ownership of our community, and really making that a reality for ourselves personally and for us collectively. So let me share this with you. I had a little bit about why I had a wonderful day today. I actually witnessed, before my eyes, I actually witnessed a group of people, a body of people, actually take ownership, take responsibility for their community. And I mean, it happened. Remember when you used to do the green wave, Brother Jamil?
Sure.
I mean, it happened just like that. One person stood up and, you know, started talking about something that, oh, we all ought to do this. And it was almost like a tsunami. It was so infectious, that spirit, that mentality, not so much just a spirit or an ethereal thing, but that mentality, the mindset that this one individual talked about in terms of taking responsibility for what we know we could, should, can, and will do to improve our own conditions, because right at that moment, the realization set in that this is something vital and necessary for our future, and no one else is going to do it for us. Now, there have been times in just about everybody's life when you realize, you know, your back may be against the wall and, hey, there's something pressing, we got to handle this, we got to deal with this situation. Sometimes people respond in different ways. Sometimes people kind of let it slide and, you know, the situation becomes what it's going to become. Sometimes people kind of get on board and, you know, they do it kind of half-heartedly and nothing seems to come about. But it was really mind-blowing and mind-boggling to see in different parts, almost different parts, I'd say, of this part of town, people getting the same idea at the same time and then starting to move out and take action based on the idea that just started with one person in one place at one time. And it all centered and revolved around taking ownership for our community, assuming responsibility for our community. That, to my heart, was beautiful. It was awesome to just witness that. And because I was there, I was actually a part of that. So it was awesome to be a part of people actually putting those words, our community, into reality. Let me ask you this, Brother Jamil, let me start with you. When you think of community, our community, the black community, what does that mean to you?
The first word that comes into my mind is the word triage. Triage. Now, that doesn't mean there's a hopeless situation, but when you go to the emergency room at the hospital, you must stop at the triage desk or window in order for it to be established what is the nature of your crisis and what is the most expeditious way it can be treated to return you to full and robust health. Is that right?
Yes, indeed.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Then the black community is not at, pardon me, a level of robust, full, hale and hearty health. Our community suffers from sputtering economics that are choking and nearly dead. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad describes us as a people spiritually, economically, politically, socially, morally, and mentally dead. When you've begun to flatline, you don't have to stay long at the triage desk because you can't talk to the nurse anyway. They got to wheel you in to the situation operation room. And that's what black folks are in. Our condition, our community, is a place where we all live together, but usually it's not a place that we all live together by choice, like the other communities of ethnic origin in this country. Chinese choose to live in Chinatown, to work there, to establish their businesses there, to hire one another, to fire one another, to rehire one another, to keep building their businesses. They choose that. In Philadelphia, there's a saying, have you all ever heard of a poppy store? You know what a poppy store is?
A poppy store, no.
Hmm? Poppy, you ever heard of that term, sister? A poppy store, spell it P-A-P-I, poppy. Poppy, like they call a father or a guy, the neighborhood guy. In
okay,
Spanish.
I thought it was cocaine, I'm sorry.
Come back from the brink, sister, come back from the brink. Okay, but no. But the poppy store the poppy stores in Philadelphia, the latest thing is that the corner stores, the bodegas, the stores that have been owned in successive waves of ownership by the Jews, and then by the Koreans, and then by some Indians, and then by some Arabs, now are owned by Dominicans, who you refer to them, ay papi, ay mami, but they call it the poppy store because now the latest persons to come in and exploit the so-called American Negroes are our own black brothers from the Dominican Republic who speak Spanish and don't even see themselves as a member of the indigenous American black community and are willing to take steps to exploit us. What I'm saying by all that, big brother, is that we have a community that is a community by default, a community that does not choose to be in itself, but rather chooses to be haters of self. And we need the application of medical procedures, psychologically I'm speaking now, spiritually I'm speaking. We need something done to us immediately and with great force. And that is the value, I believe, of the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad properly applied. It allows us to understand that we must do for self and not blame others for doing for us. Minister Farrakhan said to us, how are we going to blame somebody for coming in our community and opening stores if we knew that there was an economic need and yet we would not unite like the people you saw today, Brother Burke? They united, and they got up and did something for self, and it was remarkable in your sight. So it must become remarkable from coast to coast. So black people in the Hunters Point Bayview section of San Francisco must do that. Black folks in East New York and Brooklyn, they must do that. In Brown Sub, in Overtown, in Miami, they've got to do it. On the west side of Chicago, in the west end of Cincinnati, in East St. Louis, they've got to begin to unite. And when we do that, then you'll start seeing the changes that we need and that we hope to see. I'm sorry for being so wordy, but that came to my mind, and I thank you for letting me express it.
I think that's fine and dandy. It's not a lightweight subject. And I know that it's something that you can't really sum up in just a sentence or two. So we want to, you know, begin a dialogue, an ongoing dialogue, because at every step and every phase of it, there's going to be some actions that need to take place, and then we'll have to come back and have some more dialogue. So I fully understand you taking what you need to get all of that out. That's what I expect, and that's what I'm hoping will you know, allow us to get the most out of this conversation and bring the most value to the people who are listening. So thank you for that answer. So, to give you, what does community mean to you?
Oh, wow. Well, it doesn't mean what it used to mean. I can tell you that. Growing up in Compton, California, not being aware of the political process and being very guarded by my family, I always thought that we had a community. And as I became an adult and I moved to the South, I was able to witness a different type of mentality that was unbeknownst to me. And I witnessed a settling kind of spirit where we settled for our current conditions. And so now today, community is vital. It's not only vital for us, but it's vital for our children because, you know, what is around us becomes the greatest influence. And so when we talk about how educated we want our children to be, how we do not want them to suffer the things that we've had to endure, it puts to mind that there's an urgency that needs to take place, and it's taking place now, but we're being forced to do so. So, you know, hopefully before the bomb drops or the bottom falls out or whatever, it's my prayer that people come together. Let's start thinking about the methods that we need to implement to start establishing our communities. Our communities and our unity are going to be vital in the very, very near future. And so community to me, to sum it all up, means way of life. It means survival. It means capability. And at the end of the day, it means us as a people being successful in having something to call our own.
See, now, Sister Gidget, I was going to try to make this all fun. You put the doom and gloom on it.
I'm sorry.
You know, we got to get together. I'm you survival. But I can appreciate that. You know what? I can appreciate that because when you bring up the issues that you do bring up, we can't take it for granted anymore that the black community, as we all know it and love it, is what we need it to be. You know, we can't take it for granted that the reality is that, oh, we do have a healthy and viable community. I've been listening to Claude Anderson a lot lately over the past year, and one of the things that he's been adamant about repeating over and over again is that we don't have a community. Yeah, I know you live in a neighborhood, and there may be people around you who look like you, and some of them you may very well know and have some type of affinity and some relationship with. But when you think of community, if you listen to all the things that Brother Jamil said, and if you listen to what Sister Gidget said, community implies somewhere in there is going to be some vital necessities that just have to be there in order for there to be a community. You got to have safety. You got to have people who are concerned about not only themselves but other people and the property that's in the community. The needs of the people have to be met, and in order for that to happen, you have to know who's in the community and what their needs are. You know, I have a wonderful 7 and a 5-year-old son and daughter, and they watch Sesame Street, and I'm not ashamed to say I enjoy partaking of some Sesame Street as well every once in a while.
Of course.
And they have this segment on there where they talk about the people in your neighborhood. These are the people in your neighborhood, the people that you meet each day. You know, understanding who
these are people in your neighborhood.
Your community.
I'm sorry. I couldn't help it. I'm sorry. Go right ahead, sir.
Were you singing the song, Brother Jamil?
it kind of came out. Yes, sir. It just came out.
I understand, brother. I have a moment every once in a while myself. Sometimes I have moments on the bus. It's okay. It's all right. You're among family and friends. So, the people in your neighborhood, understanding who is around you, but here's a different spin I want to put on it. Understanding the needs of the people that are around you. Okay, every one of us has needs. We can start running them down the list, and I think we've done this on the show before. You know, parents need child care, and they need to make sure the education of their children is taken care of. Sister, one of you mentioned health care, and no, Brother Jamil was making the analogy of triage and the healthcare system, but if you think about it, a community needs to have access to good, reliable health care. If you think about it, there needs to be a security force in the community. We know that in urban areas and black neighborhoods around the country, the boys in blue whose job it is to protect and serve in many cases don't necessarily protect and serve us, because there are too many instances where young black males seem to end up dead, unprotected, and certainly not served, unless you're talking about served up in a body bag. That's not sufficient. But, yes, a community needs a way to secure itself and make sure that the youth are looked out for and don't end up in that same category or end up as statistics. Vital necessities. Access to clean, healthy food. We know that we can't depend wholeheartedly on the local Safeway or Giant or whatever supermarket chain we have in our city or in our locale to give us the best of food. And in many instances, in major urban centers, what's considered the black community or black neighborhood, sometimes the supermarkets are closed down. They're closing down, creating what's called those food deserts. So people actually have to get on a bus or two and a train to get to the supermarket to do their grocery shopping.
Brother, Vernon, you know, it's so interesting, if I may, brother. I lived in Detroit for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And in Detroit today, to this very day, with the closing of the Farmer Jack chain of supermarkets, there is not one major food chain store, not Kroger, not Safeway, not Winn-Dixie, not Giant, not ShopRite, not any, not Pathmark, no one. There's not one major food chain store in the whole city of Detroit with a population of 800,000 people, which is 82% black. The largest black city, the largest black city in the world in terms of majority population, the largest black city in the world outside the continent of Africa is Detroit. And Detroit is a food desert. You're exactly right.
Wow.
We have a crisis in community, and the community is not taking shape as fast as we would like, but it's dialogues like this that help us to put the idea in our mind. I like what you said earlier. It was not an ethereal spirit that got into the folks who cooperated today. It was a mentality and a mindset that was agreeable, and where they came into common accord and decided to act on their shared interest and in their common behalf. That is the way that our communities have to form. But communities don't have to be in the urban cities. I was thinking when you talked about communities. I mean, you know, I thought about television shows. You know, I'm one of those children that grew up in a certain time frame. I'm older than both of you guys by very, very far. And so by the time the shows that I watched as a child were over with, you guys saw them on reruns, but there was an old Western called Gunsmoke. And in Gunsmoke...
Oh, we love Gunsmoke.
Yeah, you had the security force, old Marshall Dillon. Is that right?
Right.
You had intelligence.
Yes.
You had intelligence. Remember Festus? Ken Curtis as Festus. And then you had the health care. Remember old Doc? Is that right?
Yes.
And then Miss Kitty, she saw to the other needs of the community.
Miss Amanda and Blake,
so,
yes.
So there was a community, and they were already modeling what they would do in a community for themselves. We need to do the things that have to be done for a community. I know that's a long interruption, but, man, it's so clear what you're saying, my brother, so clear.
You know, I really hope that the clarity that you're talking about, I hope that spreads and starts to occur for many more people. I've been listening to our beloved dear and sister, our dear sister, Minister Ava Muhammad, and she's been talking about for the last year and a half, maybe 2 years, almost every time that I've heard her until recently, she's been consistently dropping the seed that we need to start thinking about living in our own neighborhood. That's where the idea for this particular episode of the show came from, a community of our own neighborhood. What would they look like? What would have to be present? How would it be to actually step out your door and the neighbor to the left and the neighbor to the right and the people who are across the parking lot and the people whose house, is back behind yours? All of them are people that have a like mind with you. All of them are people who are similarly invested in what you're invested in. They have a vested interest in the safety and well-being of the children. They have a certain viewpoint about the educational system, and you all are taking an active role in making sure that kind of educational system is available in this place for our children. What would happen if all of us made sure that, if there's something going on in the neighborhood that may not be too safe, or we may need to look into that. You're not just out there by yourself with a good idea to show concern. You step out your door and about 15 other men step out their door at the same exact time saying, okay, everybody get the nod, and we know exactly what we have to do to make sure that our wives and our mothers, sisters, and children are taken care of. If somebody's lights are, the economy is shaking, it's affecting, and somebody's lights get cut off or something like that happens, it's okay because one person in the community happens to have solar panels and they are selling power back to the grid and they can run some wires to your house and get some power going to your house. We can free ourselves from a whole lot of mess and a whole lot of madness if we start.
Or have a block party.
Have a who?
A block party.
Just to get you.
You know, we used to have rent parties back in the day for people who were in financial trouble. And, you know, you wouldn't name the person who was having the issue. Everybody would get together, bring a potluck, and donate some money, and that person would receive that money anonymously. But, you know, that was community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the funny thing, brother, you talking about community, Sister Gidget, there was a time when black people had not been as thoroughly invested with the lie, the trick, the game,
yes,
the con, and the hustle of integration. We knew that our 400-year-old open enemy had not all of a sudden become our friend. And so, therefore, we had a tendency to look out for one another. The Harlem of the 1920s had its share of urban dilemmas and crises. It had its share of urban challenges. But the Harlem of the 20s is nothing like the desolate wasteland that Harlem was to become 70 or 80 years later before white folks came in and gentrified it and took it over. Harlem was the place where black folk would have those rent parties. They would have those kinds of block parties. There was a concern for one another that people would look out for one another. You did know the neighbors, like you said, Brother Vernon, across the way and across the street, and they might have shared everything with you. You may have been a Garveyite, and next door neighbor was with Father Design. Somebody around the corner was a follower of a different W.E.B. Du Bois, and somebody else around the corner was a Bolshevik, and then somebody else was a jazz musician, and another couple was two guys lived in the apartment, and they thought maybe they never saw any girls going there, and another person was an artist, and another person, I mean, it was all kinds of people, but they looked out for one another. And it described what Martin Luther King called the beloved community. And it's interesting when you talk about a community. He said the beloved community. This beloved community is beloved of one another, beloved by God, because they do love one another. Remember the scripture's words to us, how can you love God whom you have never seen and hate your brother who you see every day? Therefore, you have to have that kind of love. But that beloved community later became expressed in a theoretical term by the erstwhile mayor of New York, the Howard alumnus David Dinkins. And David Dinkins described New York in very florid terms, but it never really became that. He called it the beautiful mosaic.
Gorgeous mosaic.
That gorgeous mosaic, that mosaic of tiles of different colors and different shimmering lights and different intensities. You remember that, brother. And he and sister, he talked about that, but New York never was that. New York was segregated. Bensonhurst was an all-white tile. East New York was an all-black tile. Brownsville, you know, and do a die bed style, that was one area. But Toad Hill was another all-white one. And the Upper East Side was all-white. But Spanish Harlem was all brown. And the Bronx was largely brown and black. And so it was mixed in some terms, but New York was segregated. And every one of these major Midwestern cities, Sister Gidget, you went from the West Coast to the South. But every year when USA Today brings out its rankings on the top 10 segregated cities in America. Does anybody ever remember seeing that? And I know we have callers online, and they'll be calling in and asking these questions. But every year they measure the top 10 segregated cities, and the list always is dominated by Midwestern cities like Chicago, Detroit, Dayton, Ohio, Cleveland, and Cincinnati, St. Louis, Indianapolis. Why are those cities segregated like that? It is because the white people in those cities took in those migrants from the South and brutally suppressed them, herded them into communities, and then threatened them with real consequence if they spilled over with their Negro-ness into the other communities. Dick Gregory said it like this. He said, down South, the white folks don't really care how close you get to them as long as you don't get too big. They said up north, it's the opposite. They don't care how big you get in what you do. Just please. don't get too close.
Mm. And that's right, they're territorial.
And the community of our being herded into an involuntary community by default was founded in that particular way. So there were boundaries you didn't cross over. If you lived in Chicago, you didn't cross Kedzie Avenue. You stopped. If you were in Chicago, you didn't cross 31st Street. That was a low end. That was a Polish community. Don't go over there. They'll kick sparks from you. Don't cross 63rd Street in Philly, in West Philly, because there were Italians over there. They didn't want you over there. You know, in every one of those big cities like that, there was always, don't come in our area, huh? Ask Yusuf Hawkins. Oh, no, but you can't ask him because they beat that young brother to death for him trying to come and get a car in New York. Beat him to death. See, this is the America. This is the America that you and I live in. If you were in Compton, you couldn't just go over into Linwood. Linwood was not for you. No, no. Compton was for you, and you better follow Compton up through San Pedro and up to South Central. Don't be messing around in those suburbs that were for white people back in the day. But now,
you and I have River Oaks. Don't forget them.
Oh, no, River Oaks, man. I was walking down the street in River Oaks last year and looking at the fine homes over there, you know, by the canal, Sister Gidget, the beautiful mansions over there and the landscape lawns. I'm walking through the area, and I get, here come the Houston police. Everything all right, sir? I mean,
Elijah Wan, the basketball player, you know, very prominent in his time. At that time, he was a very active player. They had won two championships back to back. Could not purchase a home in River Oaks. He wasn't a thug. He wasn't a criminal. Everybody knew him. You know, he was a good, upstanding citizen as far as his record was concerned. Could not buy a home in River Oaks.
Well, I don't know what the town was, but didn't Oprah Winfrey have a bit of problem with that at one point? She thought that she could, you know, use her massive amounts of dollars to purchase a home in one of the most exclusive and elite communities in America, and they told her, not up in here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got the right name, but the wrong skin color.
Yeah, well, I'm going to quote one of your namesakes, my dear brother. Does anybody know the name Sergeant Vernon Waters? Anybody ever heard of Sergeant Vernon Waters?
No, sir.
Sergeant Vernon Waters, he is a fictional character from the movie and the play A Soldier's Story. Remember that?
Yes. What's his name? And Howard Robbins.
Yeah, Howard Robbins and Denzel Washington and all those other actors, and also the actor who played Sergeant Waters was Adolph Caesar, who had a great
Adolph
character
Caesar.
Voice. He had a great character voice. He sounded like this. And he would tell them people, you know, we'll get them ball form uniforms off. Think about it. And then, I mean, but he was explaining what it's like to be in a community, brother, that is conflicted against itself, at once in love with the best that we represent, but self-hatred was inflicted upon us, and then we inflicted it upon each other, and so we tried to get up out of the community, often by hating other people who we saw as more victimized by racism and self-degradation than we. Sergeant Vernon Waters was one of those men in this play who wanted to be recognized as a dignified man. He wanted to be recognized as an American. He wanted to be treated fairly, and he saw the ignorant Negro, particularly from the South, with his inflected speech and his guitar strumming and his, you know, loping strides and his easy athleticism. He saw that kind of a Negro as a harkback and a throwback to put us back on the plantation. So he took it upon himself to fight against that one character in the play named C.J. Memphis. And he would say,
C.J., the day of the Geechee is gone, nigga, and you gone with it.
You know what I mean? And he would kind of say terrible things to him. But one thing that Vernon Waters said, he said one thing. when they were actually taking his life. He talked about black people who were angry at him for his response to racism, and he reminded them in a scene that was flashed throughout the film, if you all remember. He kept looking at the camera and saying, they still hate you. They still hate you. No matter what you do, no matter what your qualifications are for entry into their world and trying to fit into their community and keep their social equality as a goal for you, social equality with the white man, then he said, no, no matter what, they still hate you. We must begin to choose our community, and we must begin to choose to invest our community with the kind of services and realities that Brother Vernon talked about earlier. In South Philadelphia, the Italian community, that may be mobbed up and Cosa Nostra to the bone, but in that community, you don't have the kinds of street crime that you have in the black community. There's no whole stroll in South Philadelphia for little Gina and Teresa and Debbie to be walking up and down the street. No, that's for you, the black community, who will not pull yourself up. So tonight, when you call in from around the country, and I know the switchboard is lighting up, and I'm going to be quiet and get out the way, but when you call in tonight, tell us the answer to Brother Vernon's question, what about the community and what are you willing to do to make a difference? Or do you think that we've got enough of a community in black America already?
Indeed, indeed. Let's do this. We're going to take a real quick break, give everybody a chance to sip some water and take a deep breath. And those of you who are listening in on the conversation, if you want to join in on the conversation, you can dial 646-716-5971. If you press 1 on your phone, I'll see you and I'll include you in on the conversation, because we want to know, we want to put together, if Sister Gidget were to move to Maryland and Brother Jameel moved to Maryland and you and whomever else decided that we all would commit to saying, you know, we want a community of our own, what would we need to have in place? What would we need to do? What would it look like? We want to have some input from you. So on the other side of this break, get yourself ready. Join the conversation. This is the hottest show on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Vernon Muhammad, and you are listening to the No Romance Without Finance show. We'll be back in 1 minute. Joining us again on the No Romance Without Finance show. We just came back from a break, and I wanted to make sure that I let you know about our sponsor, who is a wonderful supporter of the Nation's Building Family and Network, and who is definitely the prime sponsor for the No Romance Without Finance show. Men and women from around our country have taken the theme of tonight's show to heart and found that we need to take a look at how we can get some of the energy and wealth and resources that are flowing out of our community and get those that energy, that resources, and that wealth to be redirected back into our community. So Freedom Paper Company was born. There is a black-owned, Muslim-owned brand of bathroom tissue, facial tissue, trash bags, paper towels, and other personal paper products. But in addition to that, there is Freedom Paper Company is a complete janitorial supply company, ready to supply commercial-grade products. So for you who have offices and schools and daycares and hospitals and convention centers and whatnot, Freedom Paper Company can meet your needs. Take a look at www.freedompapercompany.com to find out
how you can join the Freedom Economic Movement and make sure that you are buying black. All right. We want to make sure that our guest is still with us. Brother Jamil, you still out there?
I'm not even out there, brother. I'm right here with you.
All right. Whoa. Right in my shoulder. I appreciate that. Sister Gidget, you still with us too, right?
Absolutely, sir.
All righty, all righty. We have a couple of callers on the line. No one has raised their hand yet. So I'm going to keep on going with the conversation. I just opened the chat room, so if you all are in the chat, you might want to refresh your page, and then you'll actually be able to interact with us from there as well. Here's the point.
Callers on the line, not even raising their hand. Y'all remind me of the people who came to Sister Gidget's cookout and wanted to eat all the good dishes, eat up all the potato salad, the watermelon, wanted to eat all the good beef ribs and that fried whiting fish and everything, and didn't bring a dish at all. Just want to eat up everything. You should raise your hand.
Bring Tupperware.
And brought some Tupperware to take some home. My goodness. You all better raise your hand and say something and help us understand and learn more about how to build a community. That's all.
Indeed. Join the conversation. Join the conversation. And for those of you who will be checking the show out on the archive, you're welcome to tune in with us, too. Make sure you hit the on Facebook, we have the Nations Building Group. Sister Gidget, what's the actual moniker for the group? Because I think there are more than one Nation Building Groups on Facebook.
It's Nation Building Strong Families, Communities, and Marriages.
All right. Look for that one, and you can weigh in on the discussion as well. What we want to do is identify some of the vitally necessary aspects of a community and find out where we fit in with those things. Brother Jamil, if there was a, I was talking about old shows when I grew up, Little House on the Prairie was on, so I was a big fan of Little House on the Prairie. I liked Pa and I liked, the Olsons, even though Nellie was kind of twisted. But, I had a thing for Little House on the Prairie and that whole idea of the bold and rugged pioneer that was willing to brave the rapids, go against the tide and, throw caution to the wind, step out there and make a way out of no way. And after a while, these pioneering families, they went out into the wild frontier, and they made it. They turned their little homesteads into a bustling town, and then they put in the infrastructure to connect it to other bustling towns. And before you know it, everything that you didn't have in this town, it was almost nothing to say, oh, we're going to go and, live in this town over here, live in Chicago or live in here. And, oh, I got a letter from Minneapolis because Laura was sending us back pictures of the granddaughters. Whatever the case may be, but it all starts with a seed. It all starts with a little spark of an idea, and when that spark became, or when that spark was just a few families that were gathered together, it seemed like they had everything that they could possibly need. They had a doctor, like you said. They had the preacher. They had church services every Sunday. They had the school. They had the person who, what do you call the person who puts the shoes on the horses? They had
the black
neighborhood mechanic. They had the neighborhood mechanic. They had everything that they needed. If you could move into a community like that, now obviously we're not talking about, just move out into a desert town, adopt some old ghost town and you be out there talking about you're going to be the blacksmith and whatnot. But when you think about community, when you think about an intentional community, that's what I like to call it, an intentional community, because everybody has something that they are going to put on the table that is of value to everyone else. What do you see for yourself? What comes to mind? What would you be putting up on the table that we said, oh, we've got to have him in the community?
Sister Gidget or myself?
Whoever talks first.
You go ahead, Brother Jamil.
Well, I thank you, sister, but, the first thing that comes to my mind, brother, I am a product of urban America, and I'm not always proud of that because, as the minister reminds us, especially in the last couple of decades, we should be able to be familiar with farming. Farming is the first profession given by God. Farming is the oldest profession, not anything else. Farming is the oldest profession because somebody had to grow and cultivate and till the land. Farming for self is the noblest thing that we can do because we bring into existence out of the earth the things that we need for our lives. That being said, when I think of a community, because I'm a product of urban America, I look at the stamp or the template, if you will, of urban communities, enclaves, where people of certain ethnicities have gathered in certain cities around the country. And there are some of them that are spectacularly successful. When you look at Koreatown in Los Angeles, or you look at the Japanese community in San Francisco, the Chinese community in San Francisco and New York and other cities, Chicago, you're looking at communities where people choose to live together and they service as many of their own needs as possible. So for me, a community that we would produce in answer to the challenge by Dr. Ava Muhammad would look similar in that sense. There would be on the corners the Muslim stores, which sold all halal goods, and it would not even be a thought to dream of that there would be any pork in the community. When you go to Dearborn, Michigan, you go to McDonald's in Dearborn, you're not going to be able to get a sausage, egg, and cheese McMuffin unless you're looking for a beef or turkey sausage, egg, and cheese McMuffin, because it's all halal in response to the overwhelming majority of Syrians and Lebanese and Palestinians who live in that community. We can do that, but we have to first believe that concept in our minds. Sister Gidget, I don't know if that makes any sense, but do you agree with what I'm saying there? Or how does that look
to you? Absolutely. Absolutely, sir.
Mm-hmm. You know, there was one interesting thing. I was driving through D.C. A couple of nights ago, and I turned down the street. You know, it wasn't a major street. I turned off of a major street onto a side street, and then from that side street, I turned onto another side street. So this was, you know, let you know how seemingly, I don't want to use the term insignificant, but off the beaten path maybe this particular street was. And it only strikes me as interesting, like it did this night as I was driving down this particular street, that in the middle of this street, they put speed bumps. Now, they didn't have speed bumps on the first side street that I turned off of. And when I turned off of this particular side street, they didn't have speed bumps on that side street. But somehow, these people on this particular block were able to get whoever the speed bump man is to come and put a speed bump or put two or three speed bumps on this block so that a safety enhancement, a speed bump is a safety enhancement, so people can't just come speeding down your block, you know. So it struck me as so interesting that even if it was just one individual, that individual, like we said in the beginning of the show, took ownership, took responsibility for what the need was in that community. And however he had to do it, he had to wield some kind of influence, maybe pull in a favor from a city council person or, you know, pull the coat of the advisory neighborhood commission or however that thing is done and make that thing a reality, make that happen. When I think about a community of our own, that stuff like that comes to mind, you know, the little things that are actually needed. I've seen places where signs were actually put up saying that, oh, there is a child here that is hard of hearing, so be aware of that. And it calls everybody's attention to the fact that we need to proceed with caution because there's somebody here that we love and care about that we don't want anything to happen to. So here's the warning sign. You know what we have here. You know, just like you talk about those communities in New York and New Jersey and Little Italy and that part of Brooklyn, where Brother Yusef Hawkins is playing. There's certain parts of town that just have the reputation they're known for. You don't go, or if you are going to come into this part of town, recognize and understand where you are. If you walk into Chinatown in D.C., and I'm sure in other cities, every sign that you look at is going to be written in Chinese. It's going to have the language to let you know where you are and who you're dealing with. I think that is such a wonderful thing, and that just always stands out to me, the fact that all it takes is an individual or some people stepping up to the plate, assuming the responsibility to make sure that what's needed in their community is in place. I know of a wonderful sister who homeschools. She realized that the public school system in her part of town was really not sufficient, wholly inadequate, actually. And for whatever her reasonings were, she decided that she was going to homeschool her six children, who aren't all spread out in age, but that's a heck of an undertaking to say that I'm going to make sure that all six of these children at their different grade levels are educated by me right here. Imagine if there were a community of parents that had children that all realized education is a need and all began to align themselves and pool their time and their energy into that particular vein, into making sure that the educational needs of the children are taken care of. Visions and ideas of the greater community, making sure that they take care of the teachers in the community, because the teaching just adds so much value. If you're taking care of teaching and molding the minds of the next generation, yeah, you should get a couple of extra credits or, you know, a little bit more incentive to make sure that you stick around and continue to do a good job for the future and for the sake of the community. I look at stuff like that. I look at the people who have a desire to be firemen, you know, volunteer firemen or emergency medical technicians. Sometimes, you know, you hang around people or you talk to people and they think that it's, you know, not cool, or they question your integrity when it comes time for you to take a look at getting what's called a squares job. You know, you have to provide for yourself and you do it by earning an honest living. But can you think of a community that does not need firemen? I hope and say that if I'm in a community and something goes wrong, somebody in that community is an emergency medical technician or a doctor or a healthcare provider who can respond when the need arises. Think about the need. Think about what we need, what you need in your own life. And then what I'm finding is we can begin to call the people who can fill those needs to us almost out of thin air. It's amazing how that happens.
Indeed. There's a brother, as you speak, brother in Brooklyn, New York, Brother Rudolph Muhammad.
Rudolph T.
Yeah, that's right. And he's a great brother of ours. Since he was a young brother, he's always wanted to be an emergency medical technician, an EMT, and now he's one of the best and brightest in that entire industry, in the toughest field for that in America, New York, and he specializes in Brooklyn. And the brother is now training and certifying other EMTs as a certified, recognized, and licensed trainer in that life-saving technology. So you're exactly right, brother. In our community, particularly in the Nation of Islam, or as you say, NOIDM, in NOIDM there are many great, talented brothers and sisters around this country, and I think we need each other now more than we ever have.
And you know, if you don't mind, Brother Vernon, I wanted to add, you know, I don't like to be on the downside of everything, but you know, I just have a different way of thinking. I apologize for that. But, you know, more than anything, you know, when we start talking about particulars that are needed in any community, in our community in particularly, what we need, what we must have is an elevated thinking. because you have to realize that still a lot of us cannot even perceive having the ability to come together and create such an environment. So to me, I think across the board, we need to start having an elevated thinking, you know, start believing in our capabilities, start realizing who we are and what we are, and not just hang on words as cliches, you know, when they say, you know, I'm a God. You know, well, what does that mean? You know, when you say you made in God's likeness and God's image, well, okay, God was a creator. So know that you have a creative ability that you need to bring forth from within you. So, you know, to me, overall, because we have so many people who are gifted in so many areas, there's not anything that we cannot do. But what seems to be the most difficult task to do is to unify. So it's my prayer that the first thing we do is go to that elevated level of thinking of our abilities to be creative and thinking about our unification to come together to reach that common goal. That is first.
You know, I'm glad that you put it out there like that, Sister Gidget, because, you know, I like to push the envelope, and I certainly do come up with these shows because I have an agenda. You know, I really believe in this, and I really feel it in my heart. And I know that, I know beyond the shadow of a doubt that when like-minded people come together to lend their energy, to lend their time, their resources to the overall good, you know, the one common cause or the body of causes and principles that they all commit to living in, I think that it'll definitely produce more benefit than any one of us can do on our own. And as Claude Anderson says, we are too scattered. We are too isolated. You know, I'm thinking about how many people got families down south and up north and out west. And, you know, every time something happens, you got to travel and go through so many different changes just to get to the people that you love. Think about that. So much more can be accomplished. So many more problems can be mitigated. And so many more unthinkable solutions that we could benefit from that, you know, you just don't think about because you don't have access to one another can come into play when unity, when common unity is really put into play and made a reality. So I like to, I guess, throw it out there here in our last half an hour. The conversation that I've been having with people was really about finding those like minds, finding people who would be willing to make a change in their life. If that change entails you, as the minister threw out there, you know, looking at some of those states that he named, you know, he talked about how valuable the potential of Mississippi and Alabama and Indiana, Minneapolis, Michigan, states like that. If that was really put on the table, would you consider relocating? Would you consider moving? You know, what state would you move to? Would you like to call others to where you are? Are you looking around in your state where viable, livable neighborhoods or land is? If you thought about moving from an urban area into a more rural setting, what would be necessary to make it there? Not just for you, because, you know, you don't want to move away from the city, just move out into the boondocks by yourself. There's got to be some valuable reason for moving out there. Maybe moving out there would give more people a chance to come and move and live closer to one another. But, you know, how do you do that? How do you make that happen? What are some of the first things that need to be thought about and put on the table when you start looking at, you know, a neighborhood of our own, a community of our own? And it does entail physical proximity. I don't think that it's sufficient anymore for us to think that, okay, you know, you living on the north side and me on the south side and, you know, this other brother or sister a state or two over. I don't think that that's sufficient. I don't think that that's going to get us through what's up ahead. So put that on the table. What would it take? What would it look like if in the next 3 to 5 years we were actually going to put together the first real, or maybe not the first, but a real viable community that represents and reflects what we think, what we say, what we believe, and what we know will be of maximum benefit to everyone involved? What does it take to begin moving in that direction? And here's something I'll put out there right from the get-go, something that, you know, we kind of think about as an afterthought. And because this is a No Romance Without Finance show, I have to put it right on Front Street. Getting your financial house in order.
If the game plan is
to do it 3 years from now or 5 years from now, whatever it's going to be, you cannot start too soon right now getting your finances in order.
There's no doubt about that. That is the most sound, basic advice that anyone can have. You know, the scripture teaches us in the Bible that money answereth all things. You don't hear a lot about that particular scripture because you hear the misquotation of the other part about money, which says that the love of money is the root of all evil. But you hear us saying money is the root of all evil. It is not. Money is not the root of all evil. It is the love of money and the putting of money before human concerns and human life that is the root of all evil between human beings. When you talk, man, you just said a mouthful, brother, because to prepare for a community of our own, keeping us in physical proximity and having us able to be in a community life with one another is essential. May I submit something for your consideration this evening? It is that the mosques of Islam, which have been described in no secret to any of us by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan as having reached a plateau of performance that he described as flatlining. Does anybody remember the minister saying that?
Yes, indeed.
He said the mosques have flatlined. Why is it that we are not any longer able to exert the kind of force and push our mosque program up into the thinking of Black America like we used to? It is because, in some part, not entirely, but in some part, it's because we don't any longer live next to each other. Even in the large cities, you have sometimes 50 and 60 miles separating the laborers of the mosque who come into the city from various and disparate elements and parts of the community, and some are way out in this area, another way out in that area. And the community itself is no longer in one particular community. When we were growing fast, when you were in St. Louis and the mosque on North Grand was growing fast, all the Black folks in St. Louis lived in North St. Louis, or they lived in Laclede, or the Peabody Project, somewhere you live in an area where other Black folks live. Now they start letting you go out in the Hazelwood Central in St. Louis County, and now you're gone from the city, and the believers are living 60 miles apart, and it keeps our community from being as tight as we could in every city around the country. I'm impressed with what I'm hearing tonight, because the questions of where would we live, what would we produce, how would we deal with other nations, and the top of my head answer is I would take some part of the Gulf Coast of the United States, somewhere probably between Pensacola and Corpus Christi, and have, and of course maybe not that whole entire coastline, but somewhere with an outlet to the ocean for trade, maybe around Port Arthur, Beaumont, Orange, Texas, and where we could actually grow things in East Texas. We have access to oil and petroleum. We have access to crops that grow in that semi-tropical climate. And we could actually begin to trade with other countries, do what we needed. We're not very far from the Mississippi River Basin in Louisiana to trade with upriver for major wheat crops and other things like that. That's an exciting question, brother, because it makes us think like nation builders. And I thank Allah
for Brother Rakim and for the others, Sister Marilyn and Sister Gidget and Brother Rasul and the others who put together nation building for us to not only consider these concepts but to act on them with the kind of mentality that you described. Man, this is an exciting show. I'm going to be quiet because those two callers are sitting over there that's on cue and not raising their hands. I'm mad at them. I'm mad at the rest of them that's on the line and not saying nothing. I'm just not going to say nothing. I'm angry to everybody. I'm just mad. I'm
Jamil Muhammad. Yeah, how you make Brother Jamil mad? That's one of the most.
How y'all make Brother Jamil mad?
In the world. Callers sitting out there. I'm going to start calling your numbers out. Just sitting on the phone listening. We appreciate you listening. I thank you for being part of
it. What area codes are they? Tell me what area codes they are, bro.
Tell me what 507 is.
I'm just going to bust them out. We got a call from 507. Ain't won't hit one on the phone. Scared, I'm going to unmute the mic. I see you out there.
I think I know who that is.
Join the conversation. Got a call from 850. I see you out there. We got another one. Oh, they just straight up. He ain't going to bust me out again. But
well, no, that's Dick Cheney. That's Dick Cheney calling in from an undisclosed location. That's who that is. that anonymous call.
Uh-oh, 507 raised his hand. He must have heard me. I think I know who that is. I think that's my friend.
That was Sister Gidget who was talking about you. I was not talking about you. That was Sister Gidget calling 507. Your microphone is open. Please identify
yourself. This is
Brother Mustafa.
This is Brother Mustafa calling from all the way from up in the cold, windy city area of the Twin Cities of Minnesota. Rochester,
yes, sir.
How is everyone? We're having a lively conversation. I hear the words about the love of money is the root of all evil, and that I do agree with. I came in at the end of the conversation, but I would love to see our beautiful black family come together at some point and learn how to be better custodians and better managers of what Allah has given to us.
That's right.
I think that's that is very noble of you. I thank you for calling in, brother. That's something that we definitely need to put on Front Street. You know, you talk about being able to properly handle what we are stewards of. You know, I don't necessarily love a car. I need a car. I want to get a new car. I mean, love don't have nothing to do with it, but I sure do wish I can get me one so that I can get back and forth to and from where I want to when I want to go.
That's
love
right.
Has nothing to do with these
Absolutely. You know, I was
kind of, as I said in the beginning, change that mindset. You need to change it from the misperception that we have about the tools and the resources that we should take advantage of, and we also need to change it towards a fervent, you know, striving, bursting forth towards what is absolutely to be in the best interest of ourselves and our families and our people. So it's a process. You know, I was reading in the Green Book, the book on the restricted law being our success, and Minister Farrakhan talks about the process that it takes to go from a rebellious devil into a divine God. It's a process to come back from where all we can do is make trouble for ourselves and make trouble for one another, to being a human being of the highest order. It's a process. So I understand that with this conversation, I'm hitting it hard and I'm trying my best to drop as many seeds as I can about self-sufficiency and independence.
Right.
And a dependence on not just our own selves individually, but a dependence on one another and an affinity for one another. I'm doing my best to throw all of that out there so that it can continue to pick up speed and hopefully become a part of our cultural conversation. That's what needs to happen on a daily basis. And based on what I saw today, if that spirit and that conversation begins to amplify and grow, we're going to see some amazing things happen. We're going to see some really, really wonderful things happen. You know, I've been saying for a while that we're going to have to get together before we're forced to get together. There's a big difference between making a conscious choice and decision to, you know, to do something that would be good for us rather than find ourselves in a situation where I have to depend. depend on you to save my life, and you have to depend on me to save your life.
Right. Yes, sir. If I may add one thing before I take my question off the air, I would just like to say that I know personally a lot of brothers and believers who are male and female that, you know, have the finance, you know, and have tried to work with each other in order to accomplish all those goals that have been set out for us to accomplish. But when we don't learn to be effective communicators with each other and learn to practice our religion within the realms of the restrictive laws of Islam and treat each other Islamically, no matter how much income we have coming in, our deeds won't be fruitful. So with that comment, I'll take my question off the air.
What a beautiful point. Brother Mustafa, before you hang up, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Oh, he hung up. Brother, I want to just say, brother, that was a beautiful point, and it reminds us of the masterful nature of the coming of Master Faraj Muhammad, to whom praise is due forever. Now, this is not a religious call. This is not a call dealing with spiritual matters per se. But what you just did was drive a home run deep over the straight center field fence. You knocked that one out of the park. How so? You hit on the point that our money and our business, the finance that we use to secure our romance, must be halal. It must be halal finance. It cannot be haram finance. It cannot be the kind of finance that's based on lies and trickery and game and crime and usury, or the loaning of money at interest, which is called riba in Arabic, and is a sin. It is the cooperative work of a people working together by the Islamic economic model, most recently and brilliantly presented by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad among the so-called American Negroes, that will get us the success that we seek. That was a beautiful point. It fed right into what Brother Vernon said earlier, that we have to get our finances together, we've got to start working on these things, and we've got to make some progress so we can go ahead and raise our children in a different world than the one that we grew up in. Yes, sir.
I love conversations like this. As you can tell, I think I'm in the right place at the right time, doing exactly what Allah put me here to do. If there was a passion, if there was an area that I could pick, it would sure enough be this area right here, particularly as it relates to economics and finance, but anything that deals with the development of community, anything that deals with, number one, first and foremost, self-improvement, because what attracted me to this path, this way of life, was the idea of self-mastery, so being able to work on myself and improve myself, that was awesome enough. But shortly after I was introduced to that, I learned that self-improvement is the basis for community development, and by making me better, I can make all of us better. That really just floated my boat and just, you know, made my heart well over. So this is a conversation that can go on for a long, long time, and I'm sure it will, because, as I said, after each conversation, we want to step back, take what we have, gleaned from this conversation, and begin to apply it. Do what's necessary, if I can set you off with an action plan. Do what's necessary so that at least financially, so that at least in your personal economy, you are in a position to be of benefit to others. Do what's necessary so that if and when the opportunity arises 3 to 5 years from now, or even sooner than that, do what's necessary so that financially and in your personal economy, you're able to take advantage of what's going to present itself to you when that time comes. Okay? Do what's necessary. If that means you go check out Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki, knock yourself out, do that. If that means you got to check out Dave Ramsey and go through that 7 or 13 step program that he has and get your financial life back in order, do that. You can only benefit yourself and the ones you love by taking responsibility for your community, by assuming your proper role as being cause in your community and not just effect. You can only benefit.
Brother Vernon, can you do this for us, please, as listeners? Because I'm not just on your program speaking tonight, but I'm asking. I can't write that fast, but if you could please list them on a website, or can we go to your Facebook page and actually get this bibliography of a particular material that we can study, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, the 13 steps, and the various different things that we need to do to repair a broken financial picture. And Sister Gidget is my friend and sister, and we've known each other, and she knows that we know many people that are close to us who have struggled mightily in the past few years regarding this financial issue, and it is a real stick in the craw of our Nation of Islam. And we really, if we can turn this thing around, we can put our talented, gifted people to work, and they won't have to worry about their bread and where they'll live and how they'll live. There'll be a means by which we can contribute, like you said, to other people. And if you want, I can definitely contribute some, bless you, contribute some material that you can listen to, because sometimes it's good to tap your toe to a song. You know what I mean? The old Parrot Strong song called Money, That's What I Want. Or you can go get the song by Denise LaSalle that said love is a five-letter word. It's spelled M-O-N-E-Y. There's a song by Gwen Guthrie that said, no romance without finance, nothing going on but the rent. These are realities. You got to understand these things. And so if that bibliography comes up, I'll throw a playlist up there with it. But I guarantee you that we need to be studying and thinking exactly on what you're doing. What a blessing to be on this program tonight. No finance without, or no romance without finance. Whoo, man, this is hot.
No doubt about it. And we will use the Nation Building Facebook page as the main repository to keep that conversation going. I can't think of a better place to do that. So be on the lookout. Get yourself on that page. If you're not already on that page, we've put the word out in quite a few different places about this show tonight. So people are actually tuning into the show from everywhere. And I say, you know, initially I mentioned NOI-dom because, you know, we just have a way of doing what we do. But we actually have friends and loved ones and listeners to this show who are from a wide range of communities and segments throughout what we know as the black community. So we thank you. We love you all. And our doors are opening. A Nation Building is about family and community and strong marriages, and those doors are open to you as well, because when we make ourselves better, we make it better for everyone else. So get on the Nation's Building website, the Nation Building page in the Facebook community, and make yourself an active part. You'll be welcome, and you can join in on some enlightening and uplifting discussions. And we'll make sure that I put these resources out there for you. Sister Gidget, we've got a bit of a lineup that we know people should not miss coming up this week, don't we?
Oh, yes, sir, we do. Starting off on Tuesday, we have Out on the Front Line with the Fruit of Islam, hosted by our beloved brother Jihad Muhammad out of Atlanta, Georgia. He will be speaking with student minister Abel Muhammad and brother Tony Muhammad. I think he's from Philadelphia. They're going to be talking about the Building of a Nation Part 2. Mm-hmm. And on Wednesday, of course, we have our beloved world-renowned engineer DJ Black Caesar, who is going to be introducing new artists and new music. And then on Thursday, oh, my God, I have a full house with Brother Vernon. You're going to be on that show, right?
I knew I smelled the shit
up. Yeah, he's going to be on it.
Well, Brother Vernon is going to join me and Mississippi State Minister Dr. Abram Muhammad, student minister from Region 7, Minister James Muhammad, and from my historical mosque, number 1 in Detroit, Michigan, student minister Troy Muhammad, and we're going to be premiering a song from Brother Arvinds Muhammad, who wrote a special love song to the MGT called Courting You. And we will also have Sister Keisha Muhammad out of Atlanta, Georgia. She's going to be our Angela Davis panel. She's going to put the oomph to my eye.
All right,
so
man.
We have a full house on Thursday, so please join us. And then, of course, next Sunday, Brother Vernon will be back with another segment of No Romance Without Finding.
Indeed, indeed. So I thank you all for joining me, Brother Jamil Muhammad. I thank you so much for making time out of your busy schedule to assist us in this endeavor.
Love you guys. Love you all a lot, brothers. May Allah bless you and keep you, and thank you all for tuning in. Make sure you meet me here. No, matter of fact, don't meet me here next week. Beat me here next week. Be here first. I want to see your face in the place, because when we get to this point where we get some finance, oh, we can push up on that romance. Y'all are hearing what I'm saying today.
Can I take a minute, Brother Vernon, if you don't mind? I just want to say something to Brother Jamil. You know, Brother Jamil, when he comes on the show, and he's often been a panelist with many others, he's always so gracious, and he's always so modest. And Brother Jamil, just once, take your bow, sir. We are so, so appreciative of you and your servitude and your tenure and your brotherhood and your leadership. And we love you and we appreciate it, because, you know, you don't play that game, big eyes, little U's. You're always there, you know, when we need you. And you're so willing from the heart. And we just feel your love. So I just want to take the time to say that I love you personally. I appreciate you, brother. Thank you for all that you have done and all that you continue to do and all that you will do in the future. And I just thank you for being that example of an FOI. And I just wanted to say that, because, and I don't want no arguments, Brother Jamil. I just had to say that. Thank you very much.
Alhamdulillah. Brother Vernon, take me out of here, Brother Vernon. Take me out of here.
Very good, brother. I got you back. I got you back. So that is it for tonight. We are on the end. We are toward the end of the show. It's been a wonderful show. And remember, this is an ongoing conversation. So know that we will revisit this again. We've had a request to revisit the conversation about bartering again. We're definitely going to talk more about actually forming a community and what goes into forming that, and the idea of having our own neighborhood and planning a block party. Who knows? We might show up on your block one day to start partying hard. You know how Sister Gidget likes to party. So we got some things in the works. We got some wonderful conversations that we definitely want you to be a part of. So make sure you come on back to the No Romance Without Finance show. Stay plugged in to the Nation's Building Network. We got some wonderful shows. And we have some wonderful topics of discussion that will benefit you and everyone that you can touch. So that is it for Sunday night. You all have a wonderful night. And may Allah bless you richly. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, family.